Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Mike Wolfenden. How are you, Mike?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Thanks for coming.
Excellent. You're the assistant winemaker here at Felton Road.
Yeah, I've been here as assistant winemaker for about 4 or 5 years now.
So you're the guy who does all the work, really, isn't
that's
it?
That's what they say.
Yeah.
it's a very kind thing for the winemaker to say. Blair is actually really, really hands-on. So I just help to follow his process and guide the wines through the winery.
Yep. Okay, cool. What we're going to do is we're going to do two interviews with you guys, hopefully. And we're going to try two different wines. Maybe talk about, I'm quite interested in understanding the evolution of style in Central Otago, because it certainly has changed over the years.
There are many facets which have influenced the evolution of the style of wines here in Central Otago, fashion being one of them. Maturity, a number of different maturities of vines, maturities of viticultural approach, maturities of winemaking approach. I think if you'd visited here in the mid-1990s, when things were just getting started, every aspect of winemaking was in its infancy. So, you know, infant vines, infant viticulture, even if the viticulturists and winemakers here were very experienced, they could only have had so much experience here in Central Otago. So there's been a great learning process, which is still underway right now. So these evolutions are by no means over. They're still happening, and we're now, I think, entering an interesting phase of maturity where we're really starting to see the fruits of the labour that's gone before. So for people like me who are recent additions to the region, we're very fortunate that a lot of the hard work has been done.
Yeah, you can understand what's going on in the past. Well, we've got two Chardonnays in front of us, and I think one of them is probably the Chardonnay. I was thinking earlier, you know, I was here in Central Otago in 2000 for the millennium changeover.
Right.
Got absolutely, happy on New Year's Eve in Queenstown. And then I came through about eight years ago and did a load of interviews. And that was probably when my wife came through. And we came to Felton Road and we tried some of the Chardonnays. And she loved one of your really buttery Chardonnays. Butteriness is, what's the chemical there?
Diacetyl, yeah.
Diacetyl, that's the buttery taste, isn't it?
It's perhaps something that's, something that we won't see quite as much of in the wines anymore.
I know, she's going to be gutted.
Yeah, partly that's a big fashion change.
Yeah.
I think better viticulture has allowed us to find a balance of ripeness at an earlier point, so we're not forced to go quite so far and get some overripe characters, which are what was giving way to that some of that diacetyl. But then also that big ripe fruit was being matched with, you know, the percentage of new oak, which was helping to build the wine into quite a big style.
Yeah.
Partly by desire and by design, partly as a practicality that I think Blair has identified from quite an early stage, that barrel fermentation for the Chardonnay was the best approach here. But you've got to start with new barrels. So whether you like it or not, the new oak components are going to start off being quite high. So it's taken many years to build up a stock of older barrels. So the second wine that we have, it's in 2013, is a wine where none of the barrels used were new at all. So 100% barrel fermented, but in older barrels.
Okay, let's just start off with talking about how the wine was made back in 2003. Because I've got it in front of me. It's got a lovely yellow colour, which is either the oak or the age. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I think that's evidence of the age of the wine. So we've got a 10-year gap in between these two wines.
There's noticeable toastiness on the wine. And
yeah, certainly.
The oak coming through, showing a bit of age.
Some of the oak coming through. I don't think it's overshadowing the wine at all. Yeah, and then some of that slightly riper flavor. The harvest dates back in 2003 were not dissimilar to what we're looking at now. But certainly the vine age, you know, 10 years ago, in 2003, those vines were either 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah. Just getting at
adolescence. So just getting into that phase where things start to get interesting. I've heard viticulturalists talking about vines coming of age at 10 years old. I think somewhere in between sort of 10 and 15 is probably more accurate. It depends on your site and your soil.
Yeah.
And coming of age in terms of putting their roots down, deep enough, building up stores of carbohydrates, sort of building up memories, really, of the years gone by. So they start to get a really consistent expression of sense of place, which is coming just not just from the soil, but from the microclimates too. But whereas the microclimate and climatic conditions vary quite dramatically year on year, you know, that soil's it is extremely consistent. And so as such, that's what gives the wine its identifiable sense of place.
You mentioned earlier, we were talking about the butteriness, and last week or week before, Gareth was talking about some of the ripeness. Some of it was to do with exposure of the fruit, etc., I think. But butteriness to me often comes from malolactic fermentation, where you take the malo acid and you convert it into lactic acid. Back then in 2003, the earlier days, was there more malo acid in the fruit, or was it more, because there's two main acids, isn't there, than grapes, tartaric and malo acid?
Tartaric acid and malic acid. I think that component, which is malic acid, is going to vary year on year. I don't know if it's necessarily been decreasing over the years. These Chardonnays and Pinots, certainly now and for every year since I've been here, have been bottled without fining or filtration.
Mm-hmm.
So it's imperative that the malolactic fermentation is complete in these wines. Otherwise, would have to filter the wine or run the risk of having that fermentation complete in bottle.
You always do 100% malolactic fermentation.
Yeah, in throughout the Pinot and the Chardonnay. In the knowledge that those wines aren't going to be filtered. So it's less of a stylistic approach. We're not trying to build a big buttery wine, and I think we'll be able to see that in the 2013, which, despite being a warm year, is by no means a bruiser.
No.
Of a wine. It's not filtering the wine is allowing us, I think, a purer and more honest expression of sight. Not having new oak isn't overshadowing the expression of sight in a wine as delicate as the Chardonnay. Not having overripe fruit, not seeking out those diacetyls, those big buttery sweet corn kind of flavors, is also allowing us to have a wine which is a true expression of sight. Chardonnay is a varietal which is extremely adaptable.
Yeah.
If you look at the example of New Zealand, New Zealand's great Chardonnays. You can look at Cumia River, which is up north in Auckland, Atarangi, Martinborough, Newdorf, Nelson, and all the way down here to central Otago. They're a great expression of Chardonnay from across the entire country, and this is a very diverse country, very diverse environments. Pinot Noir is really quite different. You know, it's much more precise. It's not so adaptable. There aren't really such great Pinots coming from the warmer, wetter climes, I don't think. As such, when you start to make a wine which is made in a big style with ripe fruit and lots of new oak, I think you can craft a very pleasurable wine. And it's certainly been referred to as a winemaker's varietal in the past for that very reason. But then you can craft a wine which, although pleasurable, could perhaps be from almost anywhere. The sense of place is completely lacking because the hand of the intervention of the winemaker has completely overtaken everything else. So by taking, you know, perhaps overripe fruit and being excessive with new oak, perhaps excessive with, you know, leaf stirring, just building up the wine, that the transparency and the expression of sight has been lost. I think that's where we're at here now, is that we're really trying to make wines which have a definite expression of sight.
In the first wine, the 2003, you know, there is a big slab of oak in there. Not ungainly, it's integrating into the wine.
Yeah.
sometimes you get oak and it just sits on top and it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can enjoy a wine like that. Don't get me wrong. I can drink anything, really, but...
it's good to hear.
quite flexible. Yeah, the oak is integrating into the wine, which is quite nice, but it does have a real richness. Are the alcohol levels the same?
I think the alcohol level should be quite similar. They're both marked 14.0 here.
Yeah, 14%. So the 2003 does smell richer and more alcoholic.
It's perhaps an indication that although the alcohols may be the same, that the balance in the fruit was really, really quite different back then. You know, since 2003, you know, the viticultural approach has changed. I think here in Central Otago, there's more vines by percentage of area under organics and biodynamics here than anywhere else in the country. New Zealand Wine Growers has a target of being 20% organic by 2020.
Yeah.
And those are nice round numbers. It looks like a target that's going to be achieved. But Central Otago arrived there some time ago. You know, there's a couple of good reasons for that. You know, some of the leading vineyards in this area paved the path for us. Ripon Vineyard over in Wanaka,
yep,
who, although only recently certified biodynamic, were farming in that way for quite some time. We're in an environment which is very dry, high UV, high wind. There isn't a great deal of disease pressure.
Yep.
Certainly not by international standards.
And also in winter, you get those really cold winters that kills off
really,
a lot of bugs.
Really cold winters, absolutely. So perhaps for us to make that conversion, to make that step, is really quite easy.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking, New Zealand's first biodynamic vineyard was James Milton's vineyard up in Gisborne. If he can do it there, then no one's really got an excuse. You know, that's quite a wet, humid place, should be quite a difficult place to make that step. But when you look at Central, you look at the hillsides, which we can see out the windows here, those which aren't being farmed are extremely dry. We may have very interesting complex soil types, but in terms of life in those soils, there isn't necessarily a great deal going on. It's a very fragile environment. So
yep,
by starting to work with composts, cover crops, mulches, we can start not changing the soil type, but bringing life into the soil. We're bringing in, you know, biomass, diversity, aeration, and so we're really bringing our soils into life and into balance, and that's being reflected in the vines. So I think here in Central Otago, having made that step in the right direction, we also see the results here more quickly than elsewhere. Elsewhere, perhaps it's more of a leap of faith. Here the evidence rears its head pretty quickly.
It's quite interesting. It's one of those things that, for me, as just a layman, really, you start to hear people talking more about the importance of all life in the soils. Not necessarily because, you know, I don't care too much about mealy bugs or whatever the hell it is, but I know now, which I didn't know maybe 5-10 years ago, that, you know, you need fungi in the soil or else the vine can't do a nutrient uptake. There's a symbiotic relationship between the roots and fungi and nutrients getting in.
Microbes and mycorrhizae, certainly, you know, these soils here in Central on these dry, parched, windblown slopes, there won't be a great deal of that going on. There's never been a mass of organic matter to be breaking down, to be providing a bed for those microbes, to be providing a nutrient source for those mycorrhizae. That's where composting, biodynamic preparations, and cover crops come into play. And you start to build the health and the balance of your vineyard. Certainly that's... the step that you start to take is you start to focus on your entire environment. It's a holistic approach rather than just focusing on the grapevines themselves.
Just comparing the two wines, I noticed one thing about the 2003, which I don't get in the 2013, is that the 2003, this is a slight to you guys, is there's a little bit of bitterness on the finish.
Okay.
And that, to me, is either an over-extraction or a burnt grapes or something like that.
It could be something that's being exacerbated by the new oak component.
Yeah.
It could also be a further evidence of you know, that not that perhaps just a little lack of precision in the balance there compared to the modern day wines, where we're seeing some of that sweet fruit from the ripe fruit, but perhaps there's an evidence there in that bitterness that the physiological ripeness wasn't quite up to speed with the sugar ripeness of the fruit.
Yeah.
And therefore you get that split, slightly sweet sour effect in the wine.
The 2013, a lot more fruit in there. You know, the 2003, either the fruit's faded or it's been overshadowed, so to speak.
Certainly the 2013, you know, it's perhaps more all about the fruit. We haven't got that new oak component. It was a warm year by our standards. It was a very unusual year, 2013. I think some fantastic wines were made here in Central Otago in 2013, but it's perhaps a vintage which will never be revered as a classic because its climatic conditions were so unusual. You know, the season overall, if you look back at the figures of heat summation, it's very, very average, but the way that heat arrived was very, very unusual. So the coldest season on record before Christmas, and then the warmest season on record after Christmas. So it achieved that balance in a very unusual pattern, and that's given rise to some, you know, very ripe physiological characteristics.
You say that, but I always think of Chardonnay, you know, it goes through different, you know, you get these very lean, chablis, green apple type flavours, and then you get, for me, you can get up to stone fruits, which is, I think, where this is at, and then you get into the more tropical pineapple flavours that you'll get in, say, some Argentinian wines or Australian wines.
We have
this appears to be more stone fruity, nectariney, around that flavour profile.
Yeah, I think that's a reflection of the typical balance of our Chardonnays here, and also a little reflection of the 2013 vintage, which with that later season heat, we didn't quite get the usual huge diurnal temperature swings with the cold nights that we get pre-harvest. So some slightly riper than usual fruit.
What typically are you looking for in terms of fruit ripeness and flavours?
I think striking a nice balance between those stone fruit, those nectarine, white peach, and then some of those slightly chablis like characteristics. Yeah, it's interesting to have that comparison with chablis made. We have such a unique environment here in Central Otago. We get such fantastic acids in our wines that, you know, to be compared to chablis, which is a wine which typically has not gone through any malolactic fermentation at all. You know, our wines have gone through full malolactic fermentation and yet have an acid balance which people can compare to that other style of Chardonnay.
You're not doing any acidification on these wines.
Oh, certainly there's no need here. It's part of the unique nature of our environment that Chardonnay and Riesling from here has very bright acidity. You know, after a full malolactic fermentation, you're picking up on stone fruit and some more chablis like characters. So that's it. That's an indication that the acid is
even in a hot year here, it's still quite juicy in the mouth. You know,
And that provides a backbone and a spine for to carry the expression of wine forward, to give it its length, which is such an important part of that component. That's what we saw maybe with the increasing vine age, is that the fruit isn't just there as an explosion which is present and then dissipates. The fruit, you know, it comes forward, hits its note, its harmonious note, and then resonates onwards and has this persistence which offers the wine a greater sense of nobility than it had when it was just being made from young vines. You know, the vintage isn't necessarily over when the grapes are picked. The environment still has a role to play in the cellars. Last winter, for example, we had a proper Central Otago winter. We got some really really cold temperatures there.
I heard it got down to -23 at one point.
That was up in Takapo, maybe Clyde. There were some pretty low temperatures recorded. We certainly had a a couple of minus 10s in a row, which gave us some interesting ground frost issues. There were more burst pipes last year than I can remember previously, so that kept us busy. What that meant was that the barrel cellars were, you know, a little cooler than usual. Perhaps the wines were getting down to 8.5-9 degrees Celsius, where they might have ordinarily been sitting up closer to 10. I thought that was quite interesting, and I brought that up with Blair, and he was happy that there's no need to intervene, and that's just the nature of the vintage still having its hand in the end result of the wine. We get these very, with those cool temperatures, we get these very, very long, slow rhythms. You know, the barrel cellars where the Chardonnay goes through its fermentations, they're underground, big thick walls. The staves of the barrels themselves, you know, are quite thick oak. Once the barrels are full of wine, the thermal mass in those rooms is quite impressive. So it takes a long time for the temperature in the room itself to change, and it takes even longer for the temperature inside the barrels to change.
Yep.
That's one of those advantages of barrel fermentation. It's why we want to carry on using barrels, even though we don't want the influence of new oak in the Chardonnay. So we get these very, very long rhythms. When the malolactic fermentation takes place in the spring, when things warm up, you know, it happens over quite a long period of time. So the barrels actually, you know, are stirring themselves, you know, bubbles of gas, CO2 rising up through the center, stirring back around the sides. The wine becomes quite turbid again. So it's getting a lot of lees contact, and that's giving the wine a lot of structure,
texture,
a lot of salinity,
yeah,
a textural component, which is helping to become, you know, part of the body, part of the core, which is, and then driven forward by that acid spine.
At the very beginning of the interview, you talked about how fashion has changed for the Chardonnay.
Yeah, fashions have changed for Chardonnay. You know, for example, actually before I started working at Felton Road, I was aware that Felton Road, this is back in probably 2006 and 2007, I'd heard that Felton Road was the only vineyard in Central increasing its plantings of Chardonnay, whereas other plantings were being removed,
mm-hmm,
to be replaced with the increasingly in fashion variety of Pinot Gris.
Yep, Pinot Gris, yeah, for the white.
Yeah, I think people were struggling to sell their Chardonnays. They were struggling with the cost of production.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure that now that the balance is really swinging back the other way, and unfortunately fashions change faster than vines grow. I think if you can afford to, really having the courage of your convictions and sticking with what you think is best suited to your site,
yeah,
would be ideal.
You were talking earlier about how the wines were bigger, slightly, well, not bigger alcoholically, but, you know, more oak, maybe a bit more lees stirring. You know, the wine is just a larger wine, if you like, as opposed to the more linear styling that you're getting now for the 2013. The 2013 is a very nice wine, but it's very precise linear style of wine.
Yeah.
The acidity's good, you know, everything's nice, but it's not, you know, it's not a big old fat jolly man sort of thing.
quite right. I think that style, yeah, as I was intimating before, that the big old fat jolly man style of Chardonnay is perhaps a style which can be achieved by design.
Yeah,
from many different areas, many different sites.
No, I suppose from a fashion point of view, though,
right?
Because you were creating a style of that wine, in your own way, with the whether it be because you needed old oak.
It's difficult for me to say, having not been here at the time, how much of that was by desire and design, and how much of that was by what was being offered by the fruit, by that younger vine fruit. By the approach in viticulture that was there at the time, by the approach in winemaking with a bit more oak that was there at the time. I'm sure that Blair and Nigel, who have always been long-term Burgundy drinkers, would probably have been more influenced to be making wines in that linear style if the opportunity presented itself. But I think from the get-go, you know, it's probably every winemaker's desire to make wines which are a true reflection of place. And yeah, perhaps the fruit which made those bigger wines was a reflection of time and place.
Thinking of the 2013, in terms of where I would put it, it's too rich for a Chablis.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have any of the nuttiness that you might expect from a Merlot or a Burgundy. So I'd actually put it sort of halfway between the two, really. It's sort of got the ripeness that you'd get in a normal Burgundy Cote d'Or, Cote d'Or.
It's good to. I'm pleased to see you struggling to find a precise comparison. Comparisons are fun, and that's what we automatically do based on sort of the history of our palates. But it's good to see you having a bit of a struggle, because it's hopefully a reflection of the unique nature of our environment here in Central, that we are gaining a maturity where we have a established, consistent style, which is uniquely Central Otago, you know, uniquely Bannockburn, and for this one, uniquely Block 2. If we were making something which could be mistaken for something else, it wouldn't be uniquely ours.
Excellent. All right, then I think we're going to wrap it up there. And next week we'll have a chat about some of these older vines, Pinots.
Great.
Cheers.